Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
So now I'm ready. I'm ready to go. I'm a little bit nervous. And everybody's saying, you're going to be great. You're going to be great. And what I want to say is, why do you think that?
What would give you that impression?
All I'm doing, my part is limited. And then I have to pretend at the next part in the show that I'm interested in this party and I'm interested in dance. Is that pictures?
Yeah, we're passing around the shot of you as the ambassador.
Extremely ambassadorial.
You put the ass in ambassador.
Yes. I can't believe that based on that, I am not sent to a Baltic country this afternoon.
I would agree.
I don't understand that.
Donald Trump on line one, Tone.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
By the way, I may not have mentioned this. I told this, I guess, to Michael last night. I don't know if I mentioned this yesterday in describing this guy who picked up the handkerchief.
Scene stealer.
He crossed in front of me. He was on the other side of me and deliberately crossed in front of me.
So he upstaged you.
He upstaged me. He stole the scene. The only thing I was supposed to do was pick up the handkerchief. And this guy, who yesterday I wanted to punch in the head. Now I just want to choke until death. This guy deliberately, in his ballet slippers, crossed in front of me and stole the one specific act I was supposed to do.
I think that every morning we ought to just begin with this guy who upstaged
Hate this guy.
Just attack him relentlessly.
He's got to be in his early 20s.
Millennial.
At least we're off to a good start.
We did get some comments from some littles on Twitter, and they wanted to know at what point will you buy his house and make him move out into the street?
You know, I've thought about on an entirely different
buy the play and shut it down.
On an entirely different level. I've been involved in a small monetary negotiation lately in which I have thought about, I am so angry at what is being done to me, I have thought about purchasing the home of these people and saying, you have 20 minutes to get all your stuff and get out because I'm giving you cash.
Not even the full 30.
Boy. Gene McManus is here.
Eminent domain.
Gary Braun is here. Michael Kornheiser is here. Nigel is here to do the news, to run the board. Here is chatter. I've been told by my son to not dwell on chatter, so I'm not. I'm just going to say it's on Wisconsin Avenue, and we're open for you, and we have a very big crowd today.
Yeah, Friday crowd.
Merry Christmas card from the Mays family, John, Natalie, Clark, and Joellen. Thank you for that. The Schoner family sends us a card as well. Thank you for that. The Hagers, Chris, Hannah, Lucia, and Sadie. Merry Christmas from Jed, Laura, and Micah. That does not
Schoner's
give a last
card
name.
Very clever, where they mix
the
and
dog,
match bodies with
Michael Lee, born at 11:15 p.m. on June 21st, 3 days older than Bootsy.
Wow,
and
six rolling
pounds,
over
eight
already.
6 pounds 8 ounces, 19.5 inches inferior to Bootsy at that point. Bootsy now teeth smashing through his lower. Jaw? What is it?
Yes, he has his two lower teeth.
Is that the correct terminology?
Now he wants,
smashing through?
He's almost getting the upper teeth. He wants them for Christmas.
Kate in Westerville writes, Dear Dr. Mr. Grandpa Tony, on Friday, December 17th, my husband Les Kosek will turn 40. Is that this week? Yes, finally a man. He has boat shoes and won't wear orange pants for his gift. Will you please sign his birthday card? Absolutely. We signed it. It's on its way.
Yep.
And somebody sent this, obviously, for Bootsy from University of California, Berkeley, Baby Bear T-shirt.
The baby bear gets thrown.
And we have a bunch of T-shirts.
These are tremendous.
With this accompanying note from Zach Englund in Las Vegas, Nevada. Dr. Kornheiser, the woman to whom I'm related by employment, overheard a sample of the podcast last month and asked me, hey, what's Saliz's? Why do they keep saying eat at Saliz's? I laughed and explained the situation in that poor Chris was generally the butt of a joke or a sarcastic remark of some sort, and that he was especially the victim of team shaming with his Georgetown Hoyas. And she said, like you, I am, after all, a New York Giants fan and a Tennessee Volunteer fan. God help me. Enjoy the shirts and let me know if you can make it down to Saliz's. Try the veal. It's the best in the city. And it says Saliz's in Georgetown. Eat at Saliz's. Since 1976.
Yeah, the problem is
the chicken
they
parm
didn't,
there is
they,
great.
They didn't send any triple XLs, so they're not going to fit his fat ass, but
that's
whatever.
That's exactly right. Also, I am now a member of the Maple Guild. I have a certificate, and it's framed, and it's fantastic. And the letter goes like this. With just 48 hours until our nation's celebration of man's most treasured delight, We humbly bestow upon you membership into the Maple Guild. The Guild is both a brotherhood and sisterhood of remarkable men, women, and mythical figures who stand together in the protection and promotion of all things Maple. Membership into the Guild is exclusive. Adam Rayner, the Carthaginian General Hannibal. Who's Adam Rayner? Carl Yastrzemski, Annie Edison Taylor, and Tony Danza all in the Guild. The Guild is also fickle. Peter Yarrow in the Guild. Noel Paul Stuckey not in the Guild. Athena in the Guild. Aphrodite not in the Guild. Siegfried in the Guild. Roy, not so fast, Roy. Cheese Boy, Paul Fari, Chuck Bell not in the Guild.
Very selective
As
guild.
A new member, the Guild cordially invites you to visit our mystical maple forest in Island Pond, Vermont, a mere stone's throw from Binghamton. A mere stone's throw. It's 300 miles.
Good arm.
To take pleasure in our unique maple delights, to debate worldly matters of great importance, and to suckle the sweet maple water directly from our trees, thus giving you eternal light. Our lawyers are still confirming this claim, but we totally believe it, and at your age, what do you have to lose? The Guild understands that this sounds like an odd and maybe even creepy invitation, but we can assure you that membership in the Guild, and especially frolicking in our maple forest, will forever change your life. We shall conclude with this. The Guild has been eyeing you since the 84 Summer Olympics, which the Guild fixed, by the way. Membership in the Guild is more than just unlimited access to the best and purest maple products found at www.mapleguild.com, promo code Bootsy. It requires the great responsibility to not consider, but to demand maple in every aspect of your life, from sweetening your morning coffee to solving string theory to forging Middle East peace. Maple is the answer. The Maple Guild people are here. Gary, explain who the Maple Guild people are.
I just met them in the parking lot on the way in. But the good news is that I believe, if I'm not over-promising, they brought product for
everybody
who is here in attendance. Is hung on with
maple.
Authentic.
Everyone,
maple.
Look and, under your chair. Look under your chair.
Turn over your napkin. If it's got a gold star, you're the lucky person. The Tom and Sam will be out there later passing out some maple syrup.
And they've
product,
already put some in my coffee.
All right. How was it?
It's delicious.
Yeah, that's their theory, but I don't take sugar, so, you know, and I'm not going to.
That's great.
There's a couple of things to talk about. The first thing.
You don't take sugar. What is that?
I don't use sugar.
How do you keep your weight on?
I eat a lot of carbohydrates, a lot of bread and butter.
That explains it.
The Walt Disney Company, which pays me a princely sum to be on the PTI show, acquired a lot of regional Fox sports outlets, acquired Fox Movies, which I think is the biggest part of the deal.
Yes.
Not the regional sports outlets, though I don't know. And my note to myself is, do not ask me what this means. Because I don't know. I assume Wilbon and I will still do the PTI show at 5:30 Eastern. I mean, beyond that... the rest of it is beyond me. Maybe we should ask Ann about it later.
Yeah.
Because
it sounds
the movie,
like they want to compete with Netflix and Google and people who stream movies.
Well, which I don't do.
Right.
I don't know how to do it.
I know there's one stat I read that Disney had 26% of the box office last year and Fox Films had 11%. So this gives them a nice chunk of keeping that box office under control.
But Fox makes regular movies, whereas most of Disney's movies are animated movies. Am I correct on that?
Yeah,
or
well, this is where I saw that you and Wilbon and PTI would be intact, but that they were adding a third chair for Gaston from Beauty and the Beast.
Okay, well,
so,
you know,
I'm not sure how that'll work.
That might happen.
Maybe it's like a Jessica Rabbit thing.
I mean, it's for like $50 billion, right? It's some unbelievable sum of money that I don't think
who gets that money. Is that Rupert Murdoch's money?
Yeah,
then?
I don't think it's paid out right away.
52.
I don't think it's like if I want to, and you know, here's the money. Get out of your studios in 20 minutes. I don't think it's that.
52.4 billion with a B.
It's a lot, isn't it? Seems like a lot.
Yeah,
seems like a lot to me. But does it have? And I guess a part of it, part of the component of it, is to stop the move away from cable television. I mean, in other words, if you buy regional sports outlets and the only way you can see the team you like is on a regional sports outlet currently owned by Fox, and ESPN buys it and puts it on cable, then at that point, if you like that, you can't cut the cord, right? Am I assuming that that's the logic behind it? But I don't know if I'm right.
I don't know. That logic... I understand that connection of the dots, but I'm not sure if that's right. I just still think everything ultimately is going to be streaming. And
I don't know how to stream it. I'm too old to stream, so it just doesn't matter.
Press a button.
Prostate issue.
There was a Thursday night game last night that had absolutely...
what a draw.
Absolutely no reason to watch this game. Denver, a losing team against Indianapolis, a losing team... Denver ends up going to Brock Osweiler because Trevor Siemian, who isn't very good, gets hurt. Brock Osweiler is terrible, and Brock Osweiler was good. For the first time in his career, Brock
very
Osweiler
good.
Was good. Indianapolis is terrible. That their coach, Chuck Pagano, zero chance of being retained for next year. Yeah. A lot of this is not his – Andrew Luck is his best player, and he's out the whole year, and he's so dispirited about the medical care that he's been receiving that he went to Europe to get platelet therapy. Yes. I mean, this is the same thing that Shohei Ohtani is going to do, but he's not going to have to go to Europe to get it. This game, I don't know. I watched, 5 minutes. I had no interest. So the Thursday night games and the Monday night games, that schedule is set in April. There's no flexing.
No
on
flexing.
That. So you think maybe these
Les
teams
Kerrigan
are going to be
a
good.
Sack.
Now, I mean, if this was, Elway and Manning, you'd have watched it late in the season.
So I two not. Takeaways from this game for me, which I did watch because I punished myself that way.
The
first takeaway, speaking of being sadistic, was another 5 to 8 minute, I'm guessing maybe it was closer to 10, break in the game where we have to sit there watching a guy lay motionless on his back.
Oh, was
in
it,
the
was it
field.
An injury?
Yeah, a neck injury to a tight end blocking on a punt for the Colts. I forget his name, unfortunately and embarrassingly. A completely innocuous hit. Not anything you would expect.
That was Ryan Shazier.
Brandon Williams.
Even less so. It's just a block. They tap heads. It's not like their heads smash together. He crumbles to the ground. Tirico, who, say what you will about him, is prepared beyond the likes
for
of which
everything.
I have ever seen.
Knows every rule. Knows every nuance.
Within 60 seconds is talking about how Chip Kelly wanted this kid to quit playing when he was at Oregon because they learned he had spinal stenosis, which is a narrowing of the spine, and he went and got second opinions and was able to get cleared to play, and you're really fearing for the worst. As they take him off the field, his fingers are, twitching, but he doesn't really appear to be moving. I mean, really, really disturbing to watch.
Is there an update on this later in the game?
The update is it's a neck injury. They took him to the hospital. He had movement.
Okay.
It appeared that he was going to be okay. But that was my first takeaway. It's just like, man, it is getting hard. Those things are getting more and more
frequent.
Hard to watch. It's getting difficult to
watch. There are a lot of people turning away from football.
And the second takeaway, I don't know where you guys are on this, but if you watch any of it, I'm sure you have an opinion. And that is that this Skycam angle is, for me, phenomenal. I mean, you can really see things develop. You can get an appreciation for the speed and precision.
And it
was really cool.
Because Wilbon hates everything new.
Well,
my only point, Gene, was that this is a game. When you see this yesterday afternoon, you are not going to say, hey, you know what, guys? I'm going to stay home and watch this game.
Fantasy
so
football
you go
and
out
Vegas.
And do what you do. I'm going to watch this.
I went out and did what I did. I went out with my painter friends, and I drank too much, and I'm sitting here about to die.
Okay.
But anyway, usually I will TiVo one of those games if I'm going to be out. I looked at it, like,
there's no reason to watch it.
It has no impact on anything other than betting.
Right.
If you are a casual fan, it has no impact for you. You probably don't even have many of these players in fantasy. These are bad teams, right? You don't have most. Who are the stars?
I do agree about the Skycam. I think that if, I have sometimes in the past been forced to go to Redskins game and sit in the upper tiers. And when you're up there, you can actually see the plays develop. When you're down closer, it can often look like chaos.
You know what, for me, it does? I sort of feel like the traditional camera angle, you're kind of drawn to the ball. Your eyes are following the ball. There's no appreciation for the line play. It's just sort of a bunch of guys running into each other.
Can you see this being the number one angle in football?
No.
No,
because there's been a lot of backlash. They move away from it. So they're only using this in the first quarter last night, and they moved away with when either team was in the red zone. Friend of the show, Kip Sheeman, this morning on his local radio show, was complaining about his inability to see if plays were actually gaining or losing yards. And a recent update to this technology is they're now having to add that number in, plus.
And they were doing that last
five.
Night. They were saying, they put on 6 yard gain. But I will say, I think this is a generational thing. I think if you watch this with someone, maybe even you're a little old, Michael, but 25 or 20 and under. I mean, my kids loved it. They play video games.
It's the Madden angle.
That's the way they look at the game. And I just thought, especially from a line play standpoint, I mean, you see those holes open up. You see some of those throws Osweiler threw were
because you see X's
incredible.
And O's on a board sometime. You're like, what? How could anybody, read that? But when you're up at that angle,
it can be improved upon. It is not wide enough. So you don't see who's split out wide in certain things. It is only sort of split end to split end, but not kind of wide out. But I don't know.
It's new.
I could see them going
through. Yeah. It's like the third week. It's new. Yeah. We'll take a break. We will get out of here. Ann Hornaday will join us, and she will review Star Wars, right? The new.
That's
is
right.
Is this Star Wars 6? Is it what is Star Wars 3?
It's very
Star Wars
confusing. 8?
Star Wars the Last
They're
Jedi.
All out of we'll order.
Just keep it at that.
Whatever. Whatever. When she when she'll come back. No, we'll come back. She'll join us. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
So this is the Casper ad. You spend one-third of your life sleeping, so you should be comfortable. At Casper, mattresses are perfectly designed for humans, engineered to soothe and cradle your natural geometry. Casper brand mattresses combine multiple supportive memory foams for a quality sleep surface with the right amounts of both sink and bounce. These are things I just learned about when I did these ads, sink and bounce.
Sink and bounce.
With over 20,000 reviews and an average of 4.8 stars across Casper, Amazon, and Google, Casper is becoming the internet's favorite mattress. Casper mattresses offer Casper mattress offers. Okay, singular. Affordable prices because Casper cuts out the middleman and sells directly to the consumer. Plus, there's no hassle returns if you're not completely satisfied. You can be sure of your purchase with Casper's 100-night risk-free sleep-on-it trial. Why wouldn't you do that?
Nothing to lose, right?
Yeah, why wouldn't you do that?
Right.
Start sleeping ahead of the curve with Casper. Get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting Casper, Casper.com/Tony, and using Tony at checkout. Terms and conditions apply.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Na, 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 this is from Elliot Olshansky, who writes, with Hanukkah having begun during your trip to New York, I thought you might like some holiday music for the show attached. Please find Hane Wrote Halalu by 613, an a cappella group you heard perform at last year's White House Hanukkah party. And I did hear them back when your golf buddy was still in charge. The song, whose title means These Candles Which We Light, can be found on both iTunes and Spotify as part of the Hanukkah collection, which will soon be expanded to include the group's latest Hanukkah parody effort, A Nice Jewish Boy Band Hanukkah, which was released last week on YouTube. The new video features a medley of parodies of the Backstreet Boys, NSYNC, and the Spice Girls, perfect for Chris Saliza to listen to while drinking Malibu and watching Dawson's Creek reruns. Saliza will never outlive this. He could be the main anchor for CNN. He
you
will
can't
never.
Outlive a confession like that.
But it's all self-revelatory. It's all stuff he brought out about himself.
So thank you to Elliot, as always. Ann Hornaday joins us now. So the Star Wars, I have to tell you that I have a friend at the PTI show who's on the crew, and he's a cinephile. I guess that's what they're called, people that love cinema. And he gave me a whole list of questions to ask you about Star Wars. Many of which you would love to answer in sort of a film forum setting. I mean, they're really they're high level and they're really, really smart. I will ask you my type of low level questions.
Oh, good.
But let's start with your general feeling. First of all, which is this the last one? Is this the end of Star Wars?
Oh my God, no! Are you kidding me?
No,
shut your mouth.
Okay,
no.
This is
going to go on into perpetuity. Beyond, it'll live beyond us. This is just never going to end.
This is the second movie of the third trilogy, and they've just announced that there will be another trilogy after this.
Okay,
correct, sir.
Okay, fine. I'm not even going to ask, you know, what happens when Harrison Ford dies.
The order is so confusing.
Exactly.
It's like the order in which they came out would confuse Tarantino. I don't know who's what.
Well, is it great? Is it good? Is it very good? Is it worth our time? Go ahead.
I would say it's good. I mean, some people are saying it's great. I think, you know what I'm going to say, because I've been saying it all year about everything. It's too long.
Yeah.
I do think that it succumbs to busyness for its own sake in terms of just little plot schemes and little plot digressions that feel, like Nigel and I were talking about this, they felt tacked on and contrived to give people something to do rather than to really genuinely drive a narrative forward or to add something that's this authentically kind of, core to the canon and to this sort of master narrative.
Are they nod, wink, winks for people that have seen everything else?
Oh, yeah. There's there's plenty of... The things I liked about it are many. I mean, there are plenty of callbacks to those first movies that I think are very gratifying for the fans. I think a lot of these characters are developing in really interesting ways. I very much enjoyed Oscar Isaac as Poe Dameron, the fighter pilot. I think he's got a lot of spunk and verve. I think Kylo Ren is going into, Adam Driver as Kylo Ren is really, his character really goes to some interesting places in this movie. Rey, the young woman, Jedi woman, wasn't as interesting to me this time around. I thought she was kind of, she didn't have a lot
to do. Oh, I loved her in the last one. That's disappointing.
I did too, Gary.
She's the only thing I liked
kind of,
in the last one.
I didn't watch. I stopped watching a long time.
There you go. That's like the that's the sum up right there. But no, there's a lot to recommend it. It was directed by Rian Johnson. I think he did a terrific job. What else can I tell you?
Well, I have some questions.
The Carrie Fisher stuff was incredibly moving. I found had the way he handled her character and presence in this film is very emotional, and I just thought it was beautifully handled.
So here's the first question I have. Because when you pass the theater where this is going to debut, and you see these freaks outside in their costumes,
Nigel,
you mean fans?
Wait a minute,
fans.
And these, what do you think? What do you think of the sort of nerd geek culture that grows up around these things? Are you okay with it?
Dude, they're a television set away from being in the dining room here.
I'm just asking. I'm just asking.
That's the thing. It's like I'm sure they would laugh at me when I'm lining up to go see Jimmy Dale Gilmore and Dave Alvin. You know what I mean? Like they would.
Are you in costume?
I'm geeking out over those guys.
Do you have a lightsaber?
Huh?
I mean, are you in costume when you line up?
Like, well, if I could be, I probably. You know, I mean, I understand fandom, and I really do understand that this particular movie, and especially those first three, they have a place in people's hearts that is deep and real, and I would never ever presume to look down on it. You know, I mean, I just like we all need something like that in our lives, and if this is what gives them that, then I think they deserve to be honored, and I think that's what this trilogy is doing.
Okay.
The last one, the ones that George Lucas did, those prequels, really took them for granted, I felt, and really patronized them, and these don't do that. I mean, I do think that right now, as a film critic, I'm ready for this. It's feeling like a retread now. Like, it's the same story. It's the same kind of, you know, like, oh, we must get the dingus out of the doohickey. And
right.
We only have 5 minutes to do it before the...
Right, before the whole world blows up.
You know what I mean? Like, it's the same setup over and over again. I feel like now, okay, we're back. They've pushed reset. They've restored the core values. But let's take it someplace new.
Let me ask, I think, the for me, the most important question, and I stopped watching after like maybe the fourth one that was released because it was awful and I didn't like it. Can the structure, when you have a franchise like this or like any of these other Batman things or X-Men things, when you have a franchise like this, does that allow you to make a great stand on its own movie, or is it just impossible because it owes too much to the past?
That is such a great question.
I really did see Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman really got close. Really got close. Because, you know, it was so new. I mean, just the emotion of it and seeing that iconography of women in those roles. And it was really well made. Very well acted. And then it had all the CGI crapola at the end. And it's like, you know, and that's where they... It's like, oh, gotta check that. You know, gotta have that. That's... I think some of the Marvel movies are beautiful standalone movies. I think the Captain America movies have been really fine and sophisticated.
Okay.
And you know, so I think that's what they should be trying to do with all of these. And I do think that's what J.J. Abrams and Rian Johnson are about as well. I do think they have those values. They're trying to make a good movie. And then also kind of fulfill all these other expectations.
But are we going to end up with websites?
Hmm?
Are we going to end up with websites in which just people sit and rate every single Star Wars movie from 1 to 9 or 1 to 20?
I'm pretty sure they exist.
It's there, yeah. I mean, It's interesting. I don't know if we're going to have time, but I had a really interesting conversation yesterday with my very close friends, Tom Hanks, Meryl Streep.
We're going
to
get to that.
Yeah,
We got into that
at the end about like just this whole changing expectations about the audience and what constitutes a movie.
All right, before we get into that, I just want you to explain to me if from a movie standpoint, because I think I understand it from a sports standpoint a little bit, the impact of the Disney-Fox thing from a movie standpoint.
Well, you know, I kind of feel like I'm still trying to wrap my head around this. The pessimists would say, oh, it's all going to be superheroes all the time now and franchises, because that's what Disney does so well. And Fox has done it well, too, but it's kind of this is really going to decrease. It's going to reduce the film world to more of a monoculture and more of a monolith, and fewer movies will be made, and especially fewer original. And this is something we got into yesterday. What we want are these original, adult-oriented dramas like The Post, like Darkest Hour, like Spotlight, you know, these great movies for the rest of us that don't have Lycra in them. and spandex. And I think that's the biggest fear is, will this, is Disney, I mean, Fox has been pretty good about staying committed to those sorts of projects, generally. And they have this wonderful, you know, this wonderful boutique arm called Fox Searchlight. And it's like, what's nervous-making is what's going to happen to that operation. And will Disney see value in that and in preserving that and keeping it? Because there is value there, a lot. But they need to kind of understand that and understand that these movies may not cost $100 million, but they can often be incredibly profitable if they're done right. And I just hope that the people, that, you know, Disney's very well run. It's a brilliant company, and I really hope they can see the wisdom in that.
Let me get to the post now, which I have now seen. Okay.
God, I need to hear what you think.
Well, okay. I mean, very.
I do.
Very briefly.
We can talk about it next week too, because it's actually opening next week.
So all right. Then, all right. So. I can save what I thought about it. Okay. I mean, look, I cried throughout the movie. This was my life in front of me, even though I had nothing. I was not on the post when the Pentagon Papers were printed. But this was the only thing I wanted to do with my life, and it's gone. And it is now in an it's a historical artifact. And I cried. I literally cried throughout the entire movie. And I think a lot of people did who were in that business. But we can get to this next week.
Just to clarify, this is about the New York Post, right?
No, it's not. No, it's the Washington Post. So you moderated a panel with Meryl Streep and Tom Hanks and Steven Spielberg and Bob Odenkirk and Bradley Whitford, who I didn't even know was in the movie. Who did he play?
Not only is Bradley Whitford in the movie, but he was like MVP yesterday, meaning most valuable panelist, because he brought his A game. Everybody can find this. The video's up on the Washington Post site. Go see it because he was hilarious.
Who did he play in the movie?
He plays the only character who is not based on a real person. His character is named Arthur Parsons, and he's a composite of
the advisor.
They were advising Kay Graham not to publish.
That's right. Okay.
He's the naysayer.
Got it. So what was this? What was this like for you to? Because here's what I have been told about Meryl Streep by more than one person.
Okay.
That you can visit a movie set, and Tom Hanks will chat with you, and Steven Spielberg will chat with you, and everybody will chat with you, and she will not. She is so deeply, and all respect to her, because she's the greatest actress we've got. She is so deeply into character that there is just that common hello goodbye that does not exist for her. So I guess I find that pretty interesting, because now she's out talking and she's not in the role, so it's different. How did you find her?
Well, I've actually now spent time with her twice, because I went and interviewed her up in New York a week ago today.
Oh, okay.
So by yesterday and that was an amazing conversation, and that interview will be in Sunday's Washington Post, ladies and gentlemen. But we really
people think I talk about chatter too much. Go ahead.
But no, she was fantastic, as was Amy Pascal, the producer. And the screenwriter, Liz Hanna, and Spielberg's longtime producer, Christy Krieger. I mean, it's an amazing team. You know, she was fantastic and very, very candid. And yesterday was the same. I mean, it was like you're looking at all these people. I mean, it's an A team. They were smart. They were on point. The conversation was free ranging. Tom Hanks.
He should be president.
Phenomenal. I mean, the man
is—he's
just so bright and funny, and like you said, he's accessible. Jeff Bezos was in the room, and he was poking fun at him, and he's just—he just brings something really. Everybody was fantastic in their own way, but seeing Tom Hanks be Tom Hanks is a performance in itself, and it's really cool.
So, but you have a job. You're moderating this thing.
Yes, I was moderating, and I was.
You like them, right? I mean, you must feel pretty good about yourself. Do you worry? Wow, I'm in a situation now. I don't want to be a fangirl. I mean, I want to make sure I do this right, even though in my heart I'm sort of cool.
We've all been there.
Yeah, it happens to me all the time.
Yeah.
Happened to me with Michael Jordan interviews all the time.
Mostly what I wanted to do, it was for an audience of people who were, you know, who are special VIP clients of the Post. Of course, your bosses are in there, Bezos, Marty Baron, Fred Ryan, and I wanted to make sure that I was providing. Look, it's easy for me to get down in the weeds with these guys because many of them I have talked to before.
Right.
I can geek out over, like, you know, camera angles, and I don't know. You can get very technical. And my biggest nervousness was making sure that the conversation was entertaining, you know, and valuable to people and useful. So I wanted to cover a lot of ground. You're covering the project. You're covering the the timeline of it. You're covering the artistic decisions that they made, had their craft, and then, of course, you want to get into the issues that it's intersecting with, because the whole point was that they wanted to make it this year. It's kind of a rapid response to Trump. And then it
100%. It's about Donald Trump.
And then
movie's
but,
about him.
But then it changes. Then it changes into really a feminist. It's much more the feminism of it to me now.
Well, this is the one.
This
is the one point that I will make to you next week that I'm going to make to you now. In the first half of that movie, Katharine Graham does not go anywhere where she is not the only woman, surrounded only by men. By the end of that movie, you can see her becoming, you know, the archetype of feminism, not of her own volition necessarily, just because events thrust her into that. And you can see the response from young girls. And it is almost, it is almost the changes. If you go back to the movie Brooklyn, I hope I sound smart in this.
Oh, yeah.
It's almost the changes in what the lead woman looks like by the end of the movie.
Oh, God,
it's
Tony,
remarkable.
That's so astute of you to make that comparison.
Well, thank
you're
God.
You're right. It's an interior journey.
I win.
It's an interior journey. You're right.
Yeah.
And the way that she, the way that Streep, like I saw it again last night because we had a big premiere at the museum.
Yeah.
Watching it again and really watching her performance, it is.
She's something.
It is extraordinary the way that she embodies that change. It's it's just magnificent.
So we'll talk about that next week.
Yes, we will. But we had a lot of fun.
You.
And go to the Post and watch this video because it was we had fun. It was good.
Ann Hornaday, boys and girls, we will take a break. Thank you, Ann. We will take a break, and we will come back with news, right, Nigel? News, and Jeff Ma will join us and make a few picks. I like Jeff Ma. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
All right, it's December 15th. You probably feel some pressure to get gifts for people. You shouldn't. They don't deserve your kindness. But if you feel that kind of pressure, and you're saying, what can I get for somebody that I know a little bit and like a lot? Omaha Steaks. This is it. Omaha Steaks, $49.99. You can get the family gift pack at omahasteaks.com. You enter the code TonyK. You're going to get a 75% savings on actual normal prices of Omaha Steaks. Omaha Steaks wants me to say this is an exclusive savings just for listeners of this high-quality podcast. In a way, it is, if you're listening, but you could listen to someplace else and probably get the same deal. But listen to everything you're going to get for just under $50. And by just under, I mean like a penny under. Two filet mignons, two top sirloins, two boneless pork chops, four boneless chicken breasts, four kielbasa sausages, four burgers, four potatoes au gratin, four caramel apple tartlets, one packet of Omaha Steak seasoning, and four additional kielbasa sausages free. This is, we all seem to think this is a good one.
It's a great
deal. It's $49.99.
Yes.
You can get this. Go to omahasteaks.com, enter the code TonyK in the search bar, get a 75% savings. It's the gift that's guaranteed to be a hit.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Hot Pink Hangover. They write they continue to get amazing fans on Facebook and YouTube pages whenever we get airplay on this particular show. This song is called Get Rich. They've just released a music video for it, which features performances from three vibrant drag queens dressed up as aliens who are participating in an intergalactic talent show. What more would you need to bring it to it?
There's a lot of crossover there.
What more would you need to bring it to it than that?
Love these guys.
Michael, if people want to send us their music, how do they do it?
You can email your music into the show at jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
And if you want to buy gifts for people from Johnny O, how do you do it?
You can go to their website and use the promo code Bootsie, B-O-O-T-S-I-E.
I hope we're doing well with that. Those are good clothes. They are. They're very good
And
clothes.
If you need an umbrella for the holiday season, there is some rain in the forecast.
Hashtag Tell Michael.
Get your Tell Michael umbrella.
And that's from us. That's
Though there
different.
Are some umbrella snobs out there on social media who are attacking the foundation of this umbrella. So
how can there be such a thing as an umbrella snob?
What part is the foundation?
So I think they're looking at the button release, and they want a faster release, or I don't know. It's an umbrella. It keeps you dry.
You need to tell them to pound sand. I mean, this is an umbrella, for God's sake.
This is what I deal with.
Jeff Ma joins us now from the podcast.
Bet the process.
Very early in the morning for Jeff. Before you get to picks, I've been reviewing many of your picks, and you seem very often, or most often, maybe not very often, most often you go for underdogs. Is there a reason for that? Because it would seem to me that you could find value in a favorite almost as much, or am I wrong on that?
I mean, historically, underdogs have been better plays than favorites. In the last few years, markets tend towards efficiency, and markets have become much more efficient. So there really isn't that much of a bias. It's sort of a personal preference where I usually find value in underdogs much more than favorites. But again, markets tend towards efficiency, so a lot of that has changed and probably will continue to change. So if I'm lucky enough to come on the show again next year, maybe that will be more favorites.
Oh, you're going to be on the show because I really like you. Like when we do Chuck Todd, when we ask Chuck Todd to pick against the spread, I look at some of the lines and I actually don't understand them. And I have no idea what you're going to tout this time, what thing you like. But I looked at the LA Chargers at Kansas City -1. Given the game that Kansas City had played last week against Oakland, a similar kind of game where you had to win to maintain a division lead. And I didn't understand that at all. I didn't understand how the Chargers could be favored. Can you explain that to me?
Yeah. So there's a guy that I do my podcast with, Rufus Peabody. He does a lot of analytics around gambling, and his numbers actually like the Chiefs quite a bit. And the reason his numbers like the Chiefs a bit is because basically it's not. So what you're talking about, Tony, is the reason that lines get out of whack because people overreact to what they see recently. It's a, you know, it's a human condition called recency bias, where we tend to overreact to what we remember or what we have just seen. The reality is both of these teams, and the reason that Los Angeles ended up favored in this game is they've been a team that the betting markets have liked all season. Even if you go back to game one of the year, they opened as a 3.5. They started as a 3.5-point underdog to Denver, and it got bet down, so they were actually like a 3 or 2.5-point underdog, even in the first game. And even when they were losing, the betting markets liked them. So now that they're playing well, seemingly, and everyone thinks that they are a much better team than they really are, I remember last week I said they were overrated. That's why I like Washington. Now they crushed Washington.
Yeah.
And Kansas City crushed a, you know, pretty mediocre Oakland team, an overrated Oakland team for sure. And so, I mean, I think this line is pretty close to right at even. Like I said, my partner Rufus, he sees value in Kansas City. Our numbers actually see value in the Chargers. So for me, it's a game right now that I kind of pass on just because it's sort of like there's differing opinions.
Okay, so tell me what you got this week.
Well, we're going to go with some big dogs again, just because that's the theme. So we're going to start with Cincinnati. Obviously, a team, like you said, like that last week, if you look at what they did last week.
Terrible.
No one's going to want to bet on them.
Terrible.
Absolutely terrible. But they were coming off what is probably their emotional Super Bowl in Pittsburgh, you know, giving up a 17-point lead to them. They still have the seventh best defense in the league in terms of yards per play allowed. And Minnesota's offense has been coming back to sort of reality. They have some problems on the offensive line. They gave up 6 sacks last week. So 11 points. The point spread is just the great equalizer, right? It's the one way that you can win this game without your team actually winning, and 11 points is a fair amount of points. So I like the Bengals there.
You'll take Cincinnati plus 11 against the Vikings.
Yes, I will.
Okay, what else?
And then a team that is probably one of the most sort of overrated teams right now that no one is even really thinking about is the San Francisco 49ers. And they are giving 2 points to Tennessee. So how is that possible? How is it possible that a team that is basically almost still playing for the number one pick in the league is against a team that's still playing for the playoffs, and they're giving points to them?
I guess Tennessee, that would be Garoppolo. That would be Jimmy Garoppolo,
because they had
right?
a guy who used to be on New England?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure if you realize, but he's very good looking.
Yeah.
Handsome fella.
Yeah.
He's very good looking, and that's really helping the line here. It's a bit overrated. I mean, their offense certainly has been better with Jimmy G there, but it hasn't been that much better. He's still not. They're still not using a full playbook for him because he doesn't know the full playbook. It's a limited playbook. I just think it's kind of ridiculous for them to be giving points to Tennessee here. So I'm going to take the points with Tennessee.
Okay.
A Tennessee team that people are kind of down on but still has played their competition they've played this year and will continue to beat bad competition when they played them. And San Francisco is not a good team yet. They will be a good team soon, but they are not a good team yet.
Okay.
Then we're going to go with Houston, getting 11.5. There's just one way I would say this. There's no world, no universe, where I'd want to give an 11.5 points with Blake Bortles as my quarterback. This is still a quarterback who has, I think he has the most pick sixes of any quarterback over the last, what, 3 years or something like that. It's an astronomical number, like 7 or 8 or 9. And for some reason, everyone's forgetting that because he's playing with such a great defense and he played so well last week against Seattle. But 11.5 points is just way too many points for Jacksonville to be giving up, no matter how good their defense is.
Okay.
Does it matter to you, Jeff, who the Texans' quarterback is?
No, I mean, it would matter if it was Deshaun Watson.
Well, of course, yeah.
It's not going to be Deshaun Watson. So if it's, you know, Yates or if it's Savage or if it's whomever, no, it doesn't really matter to me. What matters to me in these cases is that these quarterbacks get a full week of practice. The problem is when they come in mid-game, they haven't had practice, they haven't had first-team reps. And that's why you see these quarterbacks play so poorly when they're coming in for relief. So, no, it doesn't really matter.
By the way, I think I read that Fournette missed a couple of days of practice for Jacksonville.
He's been banged up for a while.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's their offense. Yeah. So that would play into this.
Yeah, now,
you
can see a world where if that is the case, that they try to go pretty easy on this in terms of, you know, like not extending him or not giving him a situation where he might
also
get hurt again.
Interesting anomaly in that game. It's weird that you would see a double-digit spread in a game whose total is lined under 40. So they're saying Jacksonville is an 11-point favorite, yet the total's 38.5, 39. I mean, essentially, you score two touchdowns, you win.
Yeah.
If you're
anything else, Jeff?
Yes, we'll take one more, and it's the biggest line on the board. It's the Jets plus 16 against New Orleans.
Carville went crazy about this yesterday. Carville came on and said he would take New Orleans and give 15. And I said, James, you've never done that in your life. Okay. And he said, I'm doing it now. New Orleans is ready. Kamara is coming back. New Orleans is going to win by a billion. You're going the other way.
I'm going the other direction. And it's just because it's hard for me to believe. I mean, everyone has been so happy with Josh McCown's play this year. But, and that's why all of a sudden now this is such a downgrade with him out. But, you know, you're still talking about a quarterback that has been a journeyman quarterback. Is he really worth the amount of points? Like, what would this line be if McCown were playing? It'd probably be just closer to, what, 10 or 11 points, getting 10 or 11 points? They certainly wouldn't be getting 15 or 16 points. So I just think it's too many points. It's too much of an overreaction to no Josh McCown, who, you know, last time I checked, is not Joe Montana.
No, he's not.
Certainly the alternative, Bryce Petty, is not, you know, he's not a world beater for sure, and he may struggle, but I do think this is just too many points.
And you have it at 16, not 15?
I haven't checked it this morning.
Yeah, no, it's pretty, it was 15 when we talked to James, and that's what it opened at, but it's pretty widely 15.5, 16 now.
We'll go 16. So you're getting 16, and Carville's now giving up 16, which he'll scream about.
Well, it was 15 when he booked it. That's so fine. Yeah, they can have different lines.
All right, Jeff. This is again underdogs. I like this. I'd sit and even though you didn't bet on Cleveland when they went into overtime because Deshaun Kizer threw the worst pass in the history of the NFL yesterday, and all I could do was think about you because I'm now attuned to Cleveland's misery because you bet on them so often. So.
Yeah, I mean, you asked me a little bit about Sachi, you know, the firing yesterday and last week. And, you know, one of the things that I think is so important to point out in these situations is that, you know, the problem with winning or building sports teams is that these general managers and coaches are never given the proper time horizon to do these things. So when they think about what they do or they make the decisions they make, they're not making them based on actually, like, winning in the long term. And when they do, they get fired, right? Sashi Brown was thinking about the long term. He was thinking about building a champion contender within 5 years, and he was told he would have that time.
And he got two.
When the results, yeah. And
he got two,
it's just
yeah.
wrong. It's the same thing that happened to Sam Hinkie. It's not the right way. These owners, you know, one of my friends who owned a hockey team for a while, he used to teach a class to owners of new, you know, prospective owners of teams at Stanford Business School. And the first thing he would tell them is to cancel their local newspaper subscription, because the fact that they, you know, would fall for the sort of, you know, public opinion and make terrible decisions based on that was one of the reasons that owners are bad at this, because they just can't sit back and let someone do their job and give them the proper time horizon to do that.
I agree. And then the new guy gets all the credit in the world for what the old guy did. Thank you, Jeff.
Yep. Thanks, Tony.
Jeff, go ahead. Happy holidays to you, too. Jeff Mond, Bet the Process. Rufus Peabody. You got to wonder, is that a real guy?
Made up name.
Rufus Peabody. Fantastic. Nigel, do you have any news for us?
I do. I do indeed. And there is a big game this weekend, Mr. Tony.
Yeah.
Talking about college basketball. All eyes will be, of course, be on the William H. Pitt Health and Recreation Center on Sunday afternoon at 1 p.m. when the Sacred Heart Pioneers take on Binghamton Colonials. You call them the Bearcats. I will call them the Colonials.
Yeah.
5-6 Sacred Heart is, but 3-1 at home.
Yes, they're good at home, and they took St. John's all the way to the buzzer.
Binghamton 2-3. Now, the matchup predictor on ESPN says Binghamton has an almost 60% chance of winning.
That's
good.
Those are people who throw stuff.
It's 50-50, isn't it? They either will or they won't.
That's a good point. Another game that people are talking about.
By the way, can we wish happy anniversary to Scott and Jill Guys?
Yes, we can. They're right there on your left. Let's give it up for Scott and Jill. Very
make
nice.
Sure you call Tony.
But local reference, I feel like Harden and Weaver, you know, when I do this.
Scott going freshman of the year, going to absolutely no expense.
They had their anniversary dinner here last night.
Fantastic. I hope it was good.
Well, they came back.
Tomorrow.
Yeah, they're alive.
At the Capital One Arena, formerly the Verizon Center, Georgetown will host Syracuse. Georgetown, of course, undefeated.
There ain't no, they are right. Their strength of schedule. Wait, this is an amazing statistic. It's 351 out of 351. It is the worst strength of schedule in the entire country. That's Georgetown. The worst. And so people say, well, why aren't we in the top 20? Well, because you haven't played anybody.
Right.
So this game should help them.
If they lose by 50, this game will help them 100 points because Syracuse is probably in the top 50.
Yeah, Syracuse 8-1 on the season.
Probably their strength of schedule is probably top 50.
So on Georgetown's campus right now, there is a 10 Things We Hate About Cuse sign, which my favorite coming in at number 10. Cuse goes sock, shoe, sock, shoe.
What does that mean?
It's a reference to how they might put their shoes on in the morning.
Oh.
Sorry, that was a little fast for you.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. Yes, I didn't understand that. Okay.
Did you want to talk about the Metro almost blowing up?
Yes.
Local always.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, when your motto for the year of 2017 is fewer fires, that really is not what you want to be doing. Yeah. But there is a recent audit and emergency testing in the past week found deteriorating insulation on the electrical cables used as part of Metro's signal system. Now, this is such leaking could lead to something called bobbing circuits. This is when the electrical current indicates a train's present on the track flickers on and off. Now, normally this, as they say in the piece here in the Washington Post, this is more of a nuisance than a safety issue.
Except
for that time in 2009
where people died.
When two trains collided people died. Yes.
That's right.
Nine people died. I'm sorry.
So let's bring on the Purple Line. That's really smart.
Sure. Yeah.
That's really smart. After all of these other trains that spontaneously combust.
We'll spread thinner. Then we'll figure it out.
All right, that's
reminder that Chatter is Metro accessible.
Yes.
Yeah.
The red line, Friendship Heights.
Yes. And I do have one item brought in by the Socialite.
Socialite
contributing to the newscast today. A couple is suing a Manhattan hotel for allegedly starving the guest at their daughter's $37,000 bat mitzvah party.
Right.
The lawsuit against the Hotel Eventi was filed on Sunday. Nancy Held, the mother of the bat mitzvah girl, said the food for 150 guests at the party was so mishandled that the hungry adult guests began eating the children's ice cream dessert.
Good, because they have to go to work.
Oh, the humanity.
The children don't have to go to work the next day. This is the survival of the fittest.
I don't know that it's starving
them, though. This is important.
Though.
She said in the lawsuit that the 700 hors d'oeuvres were never served to the guests as promised, and the main course, a choice of steak or scallops, was served cold. We were starving, Held's husband Mark told the Post. We were hosting the party and we didn't have any food to eat.
What are they suing for? How much money?
More than the $35,000 that the guy with the parasite in his eye.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, the hotel tried to make good and said, listen, we'll give you a grand and a free night in the suite.
Nobody wants that.
The couple is suing for $637,000.
$600,000 in damages.
Yes.
That's what it is. Wow. $600,000 in damages.
Yes.
All right. Good. I hope they win. We will come back with Old Guy Radio.
Yes.
I will talk a little bit about my trip to New York over the last couple of days. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Policy Genius ad, and I'm going to read it straight. Policy Genius is a multi-product digital insurance platform that helps people get the coverage they need and feel good about it by providing them with a user-friendly experience. Policy Genius is like the TurboTax for insurance. It does all the hard work involved with insurance decisions and purchasing insurance, from vetting dozens of providers to delivering unbiased advice. Policy Genius provides the most comprehensive and accurate insurance quotes available online. Policy Genius provides the easiest path to insurance through tailored advice and no-pressure purchasing for customers seeking life, health, renters, long-term disability, and pet insurance. And Policy Genius sells insurance across all 50 states. It makes it easy for customers to comparison shop for all of these things. Customers know what they are buying. They don't have to waste time going from agent to agent looking for the best deal. Policy Genius has vetted and partnered with dozens of the nation's top insurance companies for its platform, but is not directly affiliated with any one insurer, so all our advice, quotes, and educational guides are focused entirely on the customer's needs. Policy Genius is not a lead generator. We will never sell your data to a third party or make you give us your contact information before you can see a quote. We work with our customers the way we would want to be treated to ensure that they get the best insurance for their needs. And how do people avail themselves of this? Because I don't have this here.
So go to
policygenius.com.
That's what you do?
Yes.
Policygenius.com. PolicyGenius, policygenius.com. Okay, good.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Thank you,
this is for Jean McManus.
My favorite.
This is her favorite Christmas song. This is Darlene Love in the lead. We'll let Jean do critical commentary on this.
So Darlene Love has had a really up and down career. She was one of in Phil Spector's stable. She was a singer with the Blossoms, the Crystals, Bobby Sox, and the Blue Jeans. And Spector, of course, treated her badly as he treated all of his.
Not as badly as as the thing that got him into prison.
Yes, right. And not as badly as he treated Ronnie Spector, his wife, either. But she, at one point, was a maid cleaning houses after this, and no recognition at all. And little Stevie Van Zandt is the one who kind of brought her back into popularity. And then Paul Schaefer got her on Letterman every night, which really rejuvenated her career, and justifiably so. And you know what? The Letterman Award, Mark Twain Award, the Kennedy Center, I kept hoping Darlene Love would
burst on the scene.
No, she didn't. But
that was very good critical commentary.
Yes.
It was.
Sang backup for Marvin Gaye.
Ronnie Spector was supposed to sing this song, but apparently she couldn't give it the oomph that they needed, so they called in Darlene, and the rest is history, as they say.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about going to New York on Tuesday and coming back on Wednesday on a train.
Must have been cold up there.
It was quite cold up there, but I was, you know, I did walk back to my hotel from this dinner that I went to, this alleged dinner that I went to on Tuesday night.
Was there enough food? Well, did you have to steal it?
Well, steal somebody's ice cream?
Okay, I'm going to get to
anybody get naked and attack the train?
No. I'm going to get
tired.
But by the way, one of the things that Tracy and I do when we take the train is we play famous people on the train, and we try and get pictures with famous people on the train. But one of the last times I went to New York, Montel Williams was on the train. And so we took pictures, and so people can track my whereabouts. On the train going up, the two famous people on the train going up were Ernie Grunfeld and Brian Billick. And Brian Billick got on in Delaware, and we took a picture with Brian Billick. And he asked me, will this be captioned, Tony Kornheiser and the preening schmo? And I said, well, I don't actually work on the captions, but that's pretty good.
Is he do? I haven't heard him on Redskins games. Is he still?
I think he works for the NFL Network.
Okay.
I think he works for the NFL Network still. Anyway, so
By the way...
So
you might push back on this, but you're more famous than Ernie Grunfeld.
Well, this was the discussion that Tracy and I had, where I said it's Ernie Grunfeld, and just nobody. Ernie Grunfeld taking the train to New York is just a guy taking the train to New York. I said, well, but 6'7", he's a bigger guy, but I guess Ernie Grunfeld now, even though he was at one point an All-American basketball player in college with Bernard King at the University of Tennessee, the Bernie and Ernie Show, and played in the league for probably 10 years.
And general manager and now, here at Washington.
Right, for a long time. I guess he's not famous anymore.
Remember when we were coming back on the plane from Lillehammer, it was full of CBS people and Olympic stars, and we sat there and tried to figure out where we would be if the plane crashed.
We'd be also.
No, we'd be also. You wouldn't have been also. I would have been area woman also died.
That's right.
By the way, Billick left Fox after 2013. I didn't realize he'd be gone that
long. He's on the NFL Network.
Okay.
And then on the way back, we sat for a while. The famous person on the train was Demora Smith.
All right.
Who's the head of the NFLPA. Mm-hmm. He left his hat in a Lyft. That's the thing that's not Uber, Lyft.
Right.
He left his hat and was panicked about this. Contacted the driver. The driver returned it
Demora
ultimately.
Demora Smith, buy a new lid.
Yeah, buy a new hat. Yeah. I said, where's
now,
your hat?
He was upset
because I didn't even say hello. I just went, where's your hat?
So
he's a hat
this
guy.
Is fame is interesting. Because I would also say you're more famous than he is, though. Probably. He is more powerful than you.
By far.
Right.
Yeah,
he can bring the NFL down.
He doesn't have the street recognition you have.
In terms of
I know who he is.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was famous people on the train. Now
a great segment.
Yeah.
Right. Famous people on a train.
The reason that I went to New York was to attend the inauguration of a variety of people into the Sports Broadcasting Hall of Fame. I didn't know that existed, the Sports Broadcasting Hall of Fame. It has existed for over 10 years, and they induct about 8 or 10 people every single year into this thing. And one of the people who was going to be inducted was John Walsh. And I go back to Newsday with John Walsh. I go back to 1970 and 71 with John Walsh at Newsday, the famous albino genius of sports, who was being inducted because he invented SportsCenter. That's pretty good. Inventing SportsCenter is pretty good. So I went up to see him do that. Other people who were inducted included Chris Berman, and I just felt I could not believe that he wasn't already in. I mean, he made that network.
Yeah.
He made whatever you think of him, he made ESPN, and he was not yet in. Leslie Visser was inducted. I hadn't seen Leslie.
Although, if the guy who invented SportsCenter wasn't in, I mean.
You're not the face of the network. He was the face of the network. Yeah. Leslie Visser was being inducted. My friend Mike Weissman, who was a producer for many years at NBC Sports, was inducted. He did the silent minute once during a game where
I remember that.
It got the highest. When you broke down that game minute by minute, the highest amount of viewers were in the silent minute, causing all people who did play-by-play in color to wonder, is there a future
for me? Well,
didn't
they do a silent game? Maybe I'm confusing it with that.
I think it was a silent half. I don't know. Anyway, he married a girl who went to camp with me, and I've known him for a long time, and he was inducted. Brent Musburger. How could he not be in?
Yeah.
He didn't come. Did he come out for it?
No, he sent a tape.
Yeah.
He's never leaving Vegas.
Brent
Musburger is never leaving Las Vegas.
Why would he?
Somebody else can. Nick Cage can leave Las Vegas. Brent Musburger is never leaving Las Vegas.
Wrigley Pear.
The person who, to me, was the most deserving. There were 10 people who were inducted. And there were five or so people on the technical side, and I didn't know anything about them. Like, I didn't know who they were. Here's the guy that should have been inducted the day this thing happened. This guy invented the yellow first down line. That is life-changing. Yellow first down line is life-changing.
I can't believe you said that. When we were talking about the Skycam, view, I was thinking, remember before
how
the yellow
you know?
First
down? Yeah. How did you know where the first down was? You had to look at those stupid markers.
Well, you know what we take?
And they weren't in the
you
shot.
You know what we take for granted now is knowing what the score is, down and distance, how much time.
I mean,
all that
screen.
Stuff was on the screen
it's
before.
On the screen. So that guy, and that guy turned out to be, he's a sailor. He just likes to sail. He likes the American.
That's like SpeedPass, that invention. That's groundbreaking.
So he should have been in that day. They should have said, hold
right.
it. We're holding a special election, and you're in. All right, so it's a very. What are you looking at me? You're giving me that look.
No, I wasn't. Sorry.
Longingly.
So it's at the New York Hilton, which is it's a big hotel. I think it's West 56th or West 57th, whatever. It's a very, very cold night.
They didn't starve you like that bat mitzvah, did they?
No. Well, you need to. Do you want to tell the story or do you want me to?
I mean, I'll give it a shot if you want. I wasn't there.
Tell the story.
You're a little testy this morning, Mr. Tony.
So the first thing I do is I land on what appears to be the wrong floor. It's a supermarket convention floor where they're giving away. They say, here, have some vegetables. And I'm in New York, and I can't really deal with having vegetables.
Thanks.
And I go, well, and people know who you are from television. And they say, what are you doing here? And I said, well, I thought this was the Sports Broadcasting Hall of Fame Awards. And they say, no, that's at the other end of the hallway. So there's hundreds of people. And there's a lot of, there's a, about three or four bars, which I immediately find. And then there's some hors d'oeuvres. There's sushi hors d'oeuvres.
Shrimp.
And shrimp hors d'oeuvres.
That's
and
the key.
Some pizza hors d'oeuvres. And, you know, and not a carving station or anything, but there's some hors d'oeuvres out there. And I don't want to eat too many hors d'oeuvres because I've looked into the ballroom and there's like 60, 70 tables and they're all set with silverware and dishes. So I assume it's a dinner.
Safe assumption.
I assume it's a dinner.
Okay. I didn't mean to be stealing your thunder when I said that. All right.
So I lay off the hors d'oeuvres, and I just have a few hors d'oeuvres. I, you know, and because I'm going to go have dinner.
The goal at hors d'oeuvres is to eat as many shrimp as you possibly can.
Is that right?
It is absolutely
my
rule.
Well, I had about four or five.
It's one of Gene's rules.
Yeah, I had about four or five shrimp.
By the way, I'm on their website. It says graphics innovator Linda Reinstein. And we were talking about the guy. Is that...
No,
it was
some other guy. It was a guy.
Okay.
Simmons or something? Somebody named Simmons? Or somebody? Is there somebody getting an award named Simmons? Or maybe it was...
No.
I don't know. They showed
Bill
it.
Bill Raftery? Maybe
no,
I'm looking...
Raftery did not...
Maybe I'm looking at an old, a different thing.
No, okay. Raftery was one of the people.
Richard Simmons?
It's not Richard Simmons. It's not Bill Simmons.
Stan Honey?
Stan Honey? Maybe it's Stan Honey. What
who
did
they call
do?
Augmented reality pioneer?
Is that it? Did he invent the line?
I'm sorry.
You're killing my story. You
okay,
understand that?
Proceed.
Yes, it was
Tony.
Stan Honey.
Then that's
confirmed.
Okay, back to the appetizers.
Killing the story, but saving the show.
Okay. So, I don't eat many hors d'oeuvres, and now I've had at least three glasses of wine. Now, I've loaded up.
You don't have to drive.
No, I'm just walking to my hotel, and I'm sitting at this table, and I find the table I'm at. I'm sitting next to Norby. The plates are out. The silverware is out. And on the table is a plate of cheese and a plate of pastries, which I think is odd, you know. And then
pastries? Not like rolls. Pastries.
Like
pastries.
Dessert okay. pastries.
Dessert okay. pastries, yes. A plate of cheese and a plate of pastry.
So that's signaling the end of the meal.
There is no meal, is the point. There is no meal. We're an hour in. Nobody served anything. There's no service. We're an hour in to the award ceremony. Now it's like 9 o'clock. And I've never been here before. And I say to a couple of people who have been to a couple of these things, where's dinner? And they go, you've never been here before, have you? And I go, no. They say, there is no dinner. That's why they had all the hors d'oeuvres. I said, what do you mean there is no dinner? I'm drunk and I'm hungry. Okay? There is no dinner. I take the cheese board. I just take it and dump it all on my plate. And then I take a bunch of paste. This is infuriating beyond words. I wasn't smart enough to know that there was no dinner.
It's like a wedding. You have to eat defensively during during the appetizer hour.
So when Nigel does that story today that the socialite gives him about the people suing on the bat mitzvah, I will be a class action witness for them. Because I don't... Is there... Let's open this up to the panel. Is there no need... Is there no obligation to say to people, and by the way, there is no dinner?
Was there an official invitation
this
that you
exactly
received?
Exactly what I was going to ask.
I don't know.
See, well, that
no,
might...
I mean, no, I, so I didn't know.
If there was...
I had to worm my way
I
in.
I would defer to
I
Gene.
I went back door on
if
this
if there
thing.
Was, the paper invitation should say, join us for heavy hors d'oeuvres
right.
and a ceremony honoring, you know, or join us for dinner if there was
it's
dinner.
A three-hour ceremony. And they served cheese.
I can see how you might look into that ballroom and see these tables
yes.
set. And
set,
assume,
beautifully set.
Assume.
With plates.
Yes. Why don't you run down the hall and get some veggies?
Yeah, well, I was too late for me.
What you want to do, you want to take a play out of my playbook, which is you always have Cheetos in your suit pockets.
Yes.
So that wherever you go, you have
some
Cheetos
some people
to eat.
Do a flask. I'll sometimes put a slice of pizza in the
do
inside
think,
pocket of my
is
suit.
Not, this was not fair.
No, it's not fair
this
at
was
all.
Ridiculous. I was starving.
Did you go back to your room and order a cheeseburger?
No, I was really late. I was
what
really
time,
late.
What time did the event?
I got back after 11.
You said it was 3 hours. What time did it begin?
The cocktail hour started at 5:30. The 7 o'clock was when the ceremony began.
And it's their M.O., apparently. Like, others who had been there said,
well, that's ridiculous.
This is how they roll.
If that's that long in dinner time, I mean, that's just appalling.
Should have grabbed a New York-style slice on the way home.
Aren't you, I mean, it would seem to me that you are obligated to give people some food.
I would think so.
Well, they gave you some food.
Well, everybody looked at me. When I grabbed that cheese thing, they went, whoa, look at this guy. What's the deal with him?
I'm with Michael. At any group event, you eat defensively. You assume
That there's no food?
But you
that this is all the food there
you get
is?
As much up front as you can.
At Chatter, a full-service, for-profit restaurant, we have food.
Yes.
We sell food.
Corner of Wisconsin and Jennifer.
Yeah.
You got to treat it like
that's
a lifeboat.
Too bad.
You got to eat all the food and drink everything you can.
Other than that, Mrs.
And
Lincoln.
I was drunk. I was. I have to say.
Attaboy.
I mean, I was walking around sloppy. That was bad. I needed something to eat. There was not even any bread. There were these pastries.
Yeah, that's
weird.
And I
gorged
weird.
On Jesus, pastries, and they were,
pastries.
I mean, I got sick the next 2 days, I'm sure, from all these pastries. Anyway.
The train trip.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. We'll come back with,
Jingles and an
Jingles email.
And a jingle from Joe Farrell, so you know the quality of this will be outstanding.
Fantastic. We'll be back. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
I have no minions around. Beasleys won't blow themselves. This leaf pile's as big as moose can. But I'm just one worker man.
Excellent production quality.
Want me to blow your street? Use the promo code LEAF.
It's more performance art than music.
Joe Farrell. Fantastic. Before we get to the mailbag, let me thank Washington Post movie critic Ann Hornaday. Let me thank Jeff Ma, host of the podcast Bet the Process, for coming on the show today. Our sponsors today, Policy Genius, Casper Mattresses, Omaha Steaks. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of The Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play. If you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. From Albert Chan in Aurora, Ontario, on Monday's show, you mentioned that Bootsy was at the kitchen table grabbing at everything. When should we expect Bootsy and LiAngelo Ball to appear at the next grand opening of the Sunglass Hut in Lithuania? It's a funny one. We have people here from the embassy in Kuala Lumpur today.
Wow.
Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia.
It's a nice commute.
Michael Shedler writes, being a resident of New York City, I was curious as to what you would be up to when visiting this week. Imagine my surprise on the first night of Hanukkah while I was bartending at a private event in an undisclosed second floor location in Midtown Manhattan that Mr. Dr. Grandpa himself walked in. Well, he must have been there.
How did he not say hi to you?
I don't know. I was in the midst of my own David Aldridge moment and had neither Johnny Walker Blue or a glass of Gattinara to send over. My coworkers, along with the assembled group of Manhattan socialites, probably wouldn't have known how to react had they heard a boisterous La Cheeserie shouted from behind the bar, so I kept quiet. True to form, you left early. You returned to your two-bathrobe hotel, but don't worry, you didn't miss anything. Yeah, I missed dinner. There wasn't dinner. Even though you weren't aware, there was a little mixing drinks. It was great to see you, and I hope to make it to Chatterson. That's very, very nice. From Todd Berkner in Adamstown, Maryland, I would like to schedule Michael for next Saturday to come and grill my Omaha steaks. I have $25 in cold, hard cash in hand. Liz and Bootsy are welcome to come along as well. We will have plenty of meat to spare. Are you up to do that?
I'll be out of town, sorry.
Paul Sweeney writes, my day, arrive 8 a.m., no snow. 10:30 a.m., no snow, but becomes windy. 12 o'clock, start snowing. 12:15, start walking to stadium. 12:30, I'm standing outside the field house. You could not see the stadium. Stadium is about 400 meters in front of you. 1 o'clock, you could barely see other side of stadium. 1:20, you could not see the scoreboard. You can see players on my side of the stadium. I only knew the first quarter was over by the loudspeaker. Halftime, no snow plows to remove snow, which was surprising. They have before. I left with 10 minutes in the fourth quarter, 3:30 p.m., 13 inches of snow. This came in 3 hours. This is the Buffalo game, obviously. Wow. I was driving to Corning, New York. I drove north to go around the snow belt. I got to the Buffalo Mall, 5 miles north of the stadium, 1 inch of snow on the ground.
Wow.
That's how regionalized it is in the Great Lakes area.
Cool.
Cameron in Austin, Texas. Dear Dr. Tony, I'm a quiz master for a pub quiz organization. Last night, the last question gave four different toys and asked if they were in the National Toy Hall of Fame. Paper airplane, stick, tricycle, cardboard box. Of course, I knew the answers were yes, yes, no, and yes. And as soon as I finished the question, I heard a lechizerie bellowed from one side of the patio. It was immediately followed by a lechizerie from another table. The second sounding was, in fact, another little using it to announce his presence to the first little. New friends were made by all. That's like geese. That's like when birds call it.
Can
each
I just
other.
Say, piggybacking on that snow, Lake Effect Snow email, Kip Sheeman, who nailed the 1st of December weather.
Yes, he did.
Said that this December would start cold, nailed the first snow.
Yes.
His next item was 12:13 to 12:15, second snow of the season.
He's
the
right.
Current forecast is for snow this afternoon.
Snow. Charlie Burt, Springfield, Virginia. So sad to hear that the Amazon package of Argo starch tore open in the box. Alan Arkin will be crushed. Amazon should make this right and send a whole new load of Argo your way. Mm. I include this info to you as the SOBs aren't giving me any return or resend options. Stick it to the man. I am the man. Ray Macara in Youngstown, Ohio. Dear Dr. Mr. Tony, after listening to the Nutcracker saga, I was disappointed. As anyone knows, the five basic positions in dance will tell you there's no crying in ballet. Next time, pull up your ballet flats, be a man, and grow something. Hashtag sad. From Frank Kelly, out playing one of the last rounds of golf of the season, I got in one of those songs stuck in my head and couldn't stop chuckling. Maybe the lyrics will sound familiar. And he writes, see the monkey, he's scratch, scratch, scratching.
Catchy tune.
Dr. Tom O'Brien.
Robert Berg.
You're talking about Marvin Gaye on Thursday's show reminded me of the days as an usher in Radio City Music Hall as a kid. We would shut down after the Christmas show ended to do what they called the concert series. It would go for about a month. The usual acts did a night or two. People like Chris Christopherson, Frankie Valli in the Four Seasons, and Johnny Cash played. But Marvin was the man. He did seven nights to an electrified packed house. I knew his music, but this white Irish-Italian kid from Yonkers was blown away. It was electric like a prize fight. I worked 2 years in 1976 and 1977. I worked the same section in the middle of the first balcony. I became friends with one patron who was there for all performances both years. He brought a different date each night, and they were hot. He was okay looking, but nothing special. His quote to me was, Marvin gets people going. I know many on the show have seen Bruce hundreds of times, but how many 55-year-old white guys can say they've seen Marvin Gaye 14 times? Signed, Edith Saliza. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white. Thanks so much for coming.
I wish one of you guys had children, if I could kick them in the head or stomp on their testicles before you could feel my pain, because that's the pain I have waking up every day.
Na 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 na. For the glow of the candles, for the warmth that they give us inside, for what have been in the temple, for the story we retell with pride, for the plight of our fathers, for the struggle endured to survive, for prevailing where some would not have bothered, for enabling our people to thrive. Anero halalu, anu madrikin, anu madrikin alanisin, for aiding our fight and the miracle of light that lasted eight nights and eight days. We say, succession, to believe even when life is flawed.
Maccabees, they fought for freedom and displayed why our faith is so strong. He's there when you need him. So together we join in this song.
But I'm home again. Myself and I. Just get rich.